Word of mouth. This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Werner Herzog is one of the leading figures of world cinema. In addition to making more than 60 films, he's produced over 20 operas and published books and screenplays and articles. He's acted in films and he's produced at least one art installation. His films are known for their unnerving originality and often difficult locations. He's shot deep in the jungles of Thailand and Brazil and Peru, through bone-chilling temperatures in the South Pole, to maneuvering in a cave of prehistoric art with only handheld cameras and minimal crew. Oh, and he ate a shoe, cooked in duck fat, on a bet.
I didn't mean to eat this shoe in public. I intended to eat it in the restaurant, but I was pushed a little bit into it, and it makes sense to some extent, because it should be an encouragement for all of you who want to make films and who are just scared to start and who haven't got the guts.
Werner Herzog's latest work is extreme in a different way. It's a startling public service announcement about the dangers of texting while driving, as told by the stories of those who've lived through it.
The worst thing that I can't say to X, which I used to be able to say all the time, go in the yard and play. I can't say that anymore. Because if we go play, we need to take the suction machine. We need to transfer him over to the ventilator for his chair. It's a production.
That's a clip from Werner Herzog's PSA, From One Second to the Next, which went viral on the internet late this summer. We spoke to Herzog this week from the studios at Dartmouth College, where he will be in residence throughout the weekend. For a list of films and talks and details on an interview between Herzog and filmmaker Ken Burns, you can visit wordofmouthradio.org. But first, Werner Herzog, a great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
This PSA, One Second to the Next, is part of AT&T's It Can Wait campaign against texting while driving. Now, usually these things, PSAs, they last about 30 seconds. What can you tell us about the process of this becoming a 35-minute film?
Well, that was the original plan, and I had to deliver four clips, 30 seconds each. But when we were on location, I immediately had the feeling this is something which would be much more intense and would be much more effective. It had a longer form. And nobody really wanted it. And I said, but I'm not extending the budget. For each case, I have only one day of shooting. I have to hire the cinematographer for a day and the equipment. So it's not going to be more expensive. So they put it out on the internet and it went through the roof. Hmm. And now AT&T and actually Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, they all joined in. They are going to show it in 40,000 high schools all across the United States. For me, it was a very unusual sort of assignment, but I had the feeling, yes, it makes sense. There's a certain dignity in it. And of course, the cultural shift that is happening with texting and cell phones is big, and it comes with great vehemence, it does.
We see several people whose lives have been forever changed as a consequence of texting while driving. Debbie Druniak of Burlington, Vermont, she was hit while walking her dog by a teenager who was texting and driving. She now has trouble with speech and vision and memory. Here's just a little clip. Her brother talking about the driver who hit her.
Her sentence was 30 days in jail. She's got 5 months of house arrest, 500 hours of community service, and that's about it. My sister doesn't want anything to do with her. She's too angry right now.
What do you think should be the penalty for texting while driving?
Well, personally speaking, I think it should be the same like for drinking and driving. But it's a principle in all legal systems, if there is no law, there is no crime. So in many states of the United States, there is no law against texting and driving. In other words, if you cause a fatal accident, in some cases police would hand you a ticket, which would be an equivalent to a parking violation. So it's absurd, but I do believe that the film, as it was shown so much, it will lead to legislation, and that's what should happen.
the video did completely blow up this summer. And I think there was a note of surprise by a lot of people that you, Werner Herzog, had directed this. Maybe because you don't have a reputation, especially for being cautious or sensible, maybe even. I think there's a little bit of a reputation of being a crazy director doing kind of crazy things. Is that fair?
That's a public perception, let's face it. I'm good in evaluating risks. I'm good in dealing with dangers. I have been in dangerous situations, but when I take people with me, I'm very prudent, I'm very cautious. And proof, for example, is that in more than 60, maybe 65 films, not a single actor ever got hurt, not one.
I did read something about someone being bitten by a snake who had to cut off his foot with a chainsaw.
Yes, these things happen. It was actually not an actor. It was one of our lumbermen during the pre-production of Fitzcarraldo, where I had to move a ship over a mountain. And, of course, a swath of jungle had to be cleared, narrow, something like 100 feet wide. And a man, a local man, was bitten by a snake. They always walk barefoot, as I did at the time in the jungle. You sink in the mud all the way to your hip, and when you pull your foot out, your shoe is gone and you never find it again. But you see, snakes always flee from you. They are like deer. But in one case, one man was bitten, a barefoot man was bitten twice by the most poisonous of all snakes, and he saw the snake fleeing away, and he just took his chainsaw and cut his foot off, because your survival time is less than 8 minutes. And our camp with serum, with antidote, was 20 minutes away. He knew he would not survive it. So he just cut his foot off, and he survived it.
There's actually a documentary film about the making of Fitzcarraldo that was made in 1982 called Burden of Dreams. And this shows this kind of intensity with which you approach filmmaking. What's happening to you in that moment, Werner Herzog, when, you know, you are in the moment of making the film, you are pushing the steamship over the mountain?
Well, once you are into it, there's no way out. You cannot say, oh, this is getting too difficult and I'm going to quit. You can't. And if you start to vacillate, if you start to have fear and doubts and whatever, the whole venture would fall apart within less than a day. And I had something like 1,000 people with me, most of them local extras, native Ashininka Kampas and Machigengas. The difficult part of it was that we couldn't move the ship over the mountain, and over weeks and weeks and weeks, it wouldn't move an inch. Big steel cables, I mean real heavy steel cables with something like 2.5 inches in diameter, would snap. So people saw I couldn't move the ship, and pretty much, I would say, everyone abandoned this idea. And then you are really alone when nobody is on your side. I mean, nobody, not one, not a single one. And when you have that many around you who all do not believe in it anymore, then it's getting tough.
I've also seen that you don't make really a distinction between your documentaries and your feature films, like Fitzcarraldo. Was that the one that you said was the best documentary you ever made?
Oh, sometimes I say this with a slightly provocative undertone, because people are obsessed by making the distinction and drawing a clear line. For me, it's all movies, and I invent in documentaries, and I stylize them, and I stage sometimes things, but not in order to cheat an audience. I try to achieve a deeper level of truth, and sometimes you have to leave the purely fact-oriented filmmaking behind you, and you have to dig straight into poetry. And then documentaries really become remarkable, and they become much deeper.
You're also known for your theory of ecstatic truth. So I'm interested in knowing what that means with this idea of sticking to fact.
let's not get too deep into it. We need 48 hours for that. but no, in essence, I would say, documentary filmmaking, number one, has not divorced itself clearly enough from journalism. everything that's too fact-oriented somehow doesn't really inspire you. It's otherwise the Manhattan Phone Directory would be the book of books. 4 million entries, every single thing factually correct and fine and verifiable. So it doesn't illuminate us. It doesn't inspire us. What I'm trying to do is finding a deeper stratum of truth, something that we can only experience in an ecstasy, in some sort of an illumination.
We're speaking with the filmmaker Werner Herzog. He's at Dartmouth this weekend. You can see him speak and see a compilation reel of his films tonight. And tomorrow he's going to be conducting a live Q&A after a screening of Grizzly Man. On Saturday, he and filmmaker Ken Burns will talk about the art of the documentary. There's much more information about all the events related to his visit. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. We're going to continue our conversation with Werner Herzog, talking about his 2005 film Grizzly Man and what it's like to play a character on The Simpsons. Please stay with us for that. This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. And let's return now to our conversation with the Renaissance man, Werner Herzog. He's a filmmaker, an opera producer, an author, an actor, and an artist whose distinctive voice and vision have made him a premier figure of world cinema. You can hear and see Herzog at Dartmouth College this weekend. There's a full list of events at wordofmouthradio.org. And Werner Herzog, back to you. It seems like the characters that you are drawn to are people who live on the edge and who go to great extremes, whether doing research in Antarctica or in the case of your 2005 film Grizzly Man, the environmental activist Timothy Treadwell. He was eventually killed by the very Alaskan grizzly bears that he purported to be studying. Let's first hear a little bit from the film.
If I retreat, I may be hurt, I may be killed. I must hold my own if I'm going to stay within this land. For once there is weakness, they will exploit it, they will take me out, they will decapitate me, they will chop me into bits and pieces. I'm dead. But so far, I persevere. Persevere.
Tell us a little bit more about Grizzly Man, the film, and the eccentric Tim Treadwell, who is really the focus of the picture.
It is, to a good part, based on footage that the late Timothy Treadwell left behind. And it's of extraordinary quality and beauty, some of it. Some of it is completely crazed, and some of it is prudent, and some of it is full of megalomania. Some of it is full of humility. It's a very, very diversified character with a lot of facets. And I think it was good that I dealt with his footage. We complement each other very well. And it's a film when, if you really want to look deep into the abyss of the human soul, you just watch Grizzly Man.
But it's interesting. There is that peering over the edge of the human soul, but also on your part as a filmmaker, some restraint that a lot of people have called upon. Let's hear just a clip from the film. It's a pretty extraordinary thing. Timothy Treadwell was killed by bears.
Yeah, eaten.
Caught on tape. But the lens cap was on, so only the recording of the audio is on. In the film, we see you listening to the audio. Let's just hear a bit of that.
Truly, you must never listen to this.
I know, Werner. I'm never going to.
And you must never look at the photos that I've seen at the coroner's office.
I will never look at them.
Yeah.
We've been watching this guy, we've been hearing your narration, hearing his own narration of his life, watching his footage, and then the critical moment of, you know, the horrible act that kills him. I can't think of another filmmaker who wouldn't just share a bit of that. I'm curious about your decision not to do it.
Well, I had to address it because the production company and the TV network and the distributor of the film all said to me, you have to address it. It's known in public that there's a tape. So I said, yes, I'm going to listen to it and I will address it in the film itself. And the moment I heard the tape, it is so horrifying that I immediately said, this is not going to happen, this is not going to be in my film. There is a borderline where you have to respect the dignity of an individual's death, and you have to accept the privacy of an individual's death. And it's not only the death of Timothy Treadwell, his girlfriend who was with him, Amy Huguenard, who switched on the camera. Mm. And because the attack was so violent, she didn't have time to take the lens cap off. She was also killed. And what you hear on the tape, and I can reveal that, she tried apparently to chase a bear away with a frying pan. You hear this banging noise of this petite woman who tackles a grizzly bear who was about 1,000 pounds heavy and was already killing Treadwell. So it's an extraordinary document. But again, you just do not make it public. The same way we should never see publicized in a movie people who jumped in despair from the burning Twin Towers during the 9/11 attacks.
You've done retrospectives all over the country, and I'm oftentimes at film students who are asking you what you recommend for them, what kind of films they should watch, what kind of books they should read. Anything come to mind for you?
If you speak of my films, you may watch anything. They're all good. Sorry for my modesty. No, they are all watchable, let's face it. I do encourage film students, read. If you don't read, you will never make a great film. So, and I personally do read much more than seeing movies. I see maybe 3-4 films a year.
You also have become this very recognizable voice as an actor. You've been on the cartoon series The Boondocks, The Simpsons.
And The Simpsons, yes. That's a real apotheosis in popular culture here in the United States, being on The Simpsons.
The number of times we've had videos like Werner Herzog reads Where's Waldo?
Yes, but those are all fake Herzogs. You have to make a distinction. There's at least 2-3 dozens of fake Herzogs out there who read Waldo or write wild, furious letters. I mean, completely crazed letters to my cleaning woman. And it's funny because people do not really distinguish. They think it was me. Fine, I accept it with great ease because I think those are all my unpaid bodyguards. Let them do battle out there.
I have conquered volcanoes and visited the bitter depths of the Earth's oceans. Nothing have I witnessed from lava to crustacean assailed me like the caked debris haunting that small plastic soap hammock in the smaller of the bathrooms.
So that was one of many Herzog impersonators. Let's hear a bit of the real thing. This is Werner Herzog as the voice of a plastic bag in the 2009 short film Plastic Bag.
I had holes, but over time I learned how to use them to navigate the wind. And I could fly. I was free. Or so I thought.
Werner Herzog, did you enjoy taking a break from making your own films to do these acting and these voiceovers?
Of course I do. And I'm, for example, a real scary villain in Jack Reacher with Tom Cruise, and I enjoyed it tremendously. And they couldn't find a man who was frightening before he even speaks until they came across me, and I enjoyed it tremendously.
I also read something about you, that you stole your first camera that you ever made a film with. Have you been asked not to share that advice with the students at Dartmouth?
No, I would advise him. If you are so far advanced with your stories and with your vision that you have, and nobody today, it's much easier. There are very good, very inexpensive digital cameras out there. At that time when I started as a 19-year-old, there were 35mm celluloid cameras out there, and I was never allowed to use one of them, and so I expropriated one of them. Sometimes you have to step beyond the boundaries of regular behavior because there's a natural right sometimes in you to bring the camera to its best form of use. But in my own film school that I run sporadically, the Rogue Film School, The only technical things I learned from me is how to pick locks and how to forge a document like a shooting permit in a country that has a military dictatorship.
Essential lessons of filmmaking from Werner Herzog. I want to thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Werner Herzog is speaking tonight at Dartmouth College after a screening of a compilation reel of his films, and again tomorrow night after a showing of his 2005 film Grizzly Man. He's also going to be sharing the stage with New Hampshire filmmaker Ken Burns on Saturday, where they will be discussing the art of the documentary. And you'll find a full list of events for the Montgomery Fellows Program, which brought Herzog here, and see his short documentary, From One Second to the Next. All of that is at wordofmouthradio.org.